Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Sam Mellinger thinks a lot of things. He thinks the Chiefs' defense is playing at an historic pace. He thinks it might be a reach for the Royals to hang on to Irvin Santana. Head coach Andy Reid, he's the most important difference between this year and last. Sam Mellinger thinks a lot of things, and he's here because of something else he thinks. He's got his dream job as a sports columnist for the Kansas City Star. He says this: you probably won't always agree with what I write, but you should always know that there is thought and research behind it. You're free to love it or hate it, digest it or dismiss it, but you'll never be able to say I'm not working hard or don't believe what I write. He grew up in Emporia and Lawrence and is a KU graduate proud, and it's great to have Sam Mellinger here with me this morning. Sam, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
You know, folks might think I'm having you on because we work together at the paper, but truth be told, we just met out in the green room a few
minutes ago. Right?
Not bad. And we're almost neighbors. You live in Westwood Hills. I live in Westwood, you know?
Yeah.
Who would have thought it, you know? Well, talk about timing. You're getting into the heart of your career just as the teams around here are turning it around. Not too bad.
Yeah, it's been when you think about what was around here a year ago, you know, the Royals have this really disappointing season. The Chiefs are in the midst of a season that I don't think
historic.
Oh my gosh! I mean, yeah. I've never been around a place where a fan base, a passionate, good, love the team fan base, actively hates a team like happened last year with the Chiefs. It was incredible. And you know, less than a year after they're dressing, you know, for a funeral and flying banners, they're breaking the Guinness Book of World Records for crowd noise. It's really an amazing thing.
And they've tripled their victory total already so far this year. I mean, just unbelievable, you know. The question you've got to ask about both the Royals and the Chiefs, it seems to me, Sam, is whether these turnarounds have staying power attached to them or whether recent developments have temporary written all over them.
Yeah, I'm actually on the optimistic track with this, with both of them. I mean, I think, if we take the Royals first, this is what should have happened. You know, this wasn't a surprise, I don't think. You know, I mean, they have a lot of young players that are ready to pop. And, the pitching was probably better than a lot of us, you know, could have expected this year. But the hitting was worse, you know, and there's still some room for growth with Hosmer and Moustakas and, you know, certainly Alcides Escobar. So, you know, they could get better. And, you know, with the Chiefs, it's the same deal. Like, we always saw this talent last year, right? I mean, they had six Pro Bowlers and two wins, which is pretty amazing. But, there was always good players there. They just needed a different scheme and really, really a different culture. You know, it was a terrible, no good, people looking over each other's shoulders culture last year.
And that's changed. What was happening exactly?
It's an oversimplification, but, it's what Scott Pioli created. And I know there's some other factors there, but, when you talk to people in that organization that are here now and were here the last 4 years, I mean, that's certainly where they point the finger. And, they talk about now it's just a lot of, common goal kind of thing where last year there was always other motivations, you know, and people were worried about, you know, how many color copies, you know, some assistants were making and just things that have nothing to do with winning football games. And that sure changed along with, you know, probably most dramatically on the defensive side, you know, away from reading and reacting to what the offense is doing, and now they're attacking more, and it's worked to spectacular levels so far.
So Andy Reid is no fool. He sees those six Pro Bowlers and thinks, this is a turnaround situation that I can have some success with, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's funny, like, in the offseason, I think a lot of people saw this talent. You know, you see Jamal Charles and Justin Houston and Tom Ball, you know, all these guys. But I don't know that anybody expected 6-0. You know, nobody saw the Chiefs were kind of a sexy sleeper sort of deal. But I don't think anybody saw anything like this. But you mentioned Andy Reid, like looking at the talent, and I think one thing that goes overlooked a little bit. And I'm not trying to get too jargony here with football, but Andy Reid prefers a 4-3 style defense. You know, that's sort of what he's the most comfortable with.
Four down defensive linemen, three linebackers.
Exactly.
You're talking about.
Yeah. And, he looks at the talent that they have here, specifically Dontari Poe, the nose tackle, and just a really, really good group of linebackers led by Holly, Justin Houston, and Derek Johnson. And, you know, brings in Bob Sutton to run the 3-4, the three down lineman and four linebacker system that the Chiefs have really flourished with.
so it's not what Andy Reid would prefer, but he adapted to the personnel he had with him on the field.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. In a perfect world, if he's, you know, king for a day, you know, yeah, he would rather play that 4-3. But, you know, looking at the talent, and that's what good coaches do, right? They look at what they have and they make the most of it.
So what else do you admire about Andy Reid? What should we know about him that perhaps sometimes gets overlooked?
Yeah, I think one of the things that you hear a lot from guys in that locker room, you know, they'll eventually get to, he treats us like men, you know, and there's a lot of trust, and you know, he comes from a pretty good start, because he walks in there, he's 14 years in the league as a head coach, he's won a lot of games, you know, so the guys, there's a certain level of credibility that he walks in the door with, and then, you know, but he earned that credibility for a reason, right? And so trust him, you know, lets them, you know, do some work on their own.
Yeah.
And again, I think there's a lot more, let's make the other team, you know, react to us rather than let's study every little, you know, scheme and wrinkle that the other team has for us.
I love this quote you got from Tamba Hali, again, the linebacker you just referred to, Sam. The difference from before, we had micromanaging, Tamba Hali told you. Now it's not about micromanaging. It's about finding a way for everybody to have success, from the head coach, the GM. We're all working together. We're not working around anything here, tiptoeing around, scared of anything. I guess that's exactly what you just were talking about. And that's saying a lot right there in one quote, isn't it?
Yeah. Tamba was great when we – I think that was last week or the week before that we had that talk. And Tamba is – if he's not the smartest guy on the team, I think it's either him or Alex Smith. He's the most thoughtful. And, you know, he's really – if you get him in one of those moods where he's, you know, a little open and you know, willing to talk with you, it's fascinating what the guy says. And,
wow.
You know, he went on to say, you know, he's talking about, you know, last year they had a lot of younger coaches, and, you know, he's talking about fist fights between the coaches on the practice field. And, you know, these guys now, they've been around the game a long time, you know, just more of a calm, like, you know, together approach that's really done well.
People don't think sometimes that a coach makes all that much difference, but look what we're seeing here. Just amazing.
It's funny, like, you know, the two pro sports that we care the most about here, right, is baseball and the NFL. And I think that the impact that managers have in baseball most times is vastly overrated by fans and media. And I think in the NFL, it can be underrated.
That's
at
interesting.
Times. Yeah, absolutely.
I was just going to ask you, who's more valuable, who's more important to his team? Is it Andy Reid or is it Ned Yost? And you're saying clearly Andy Reid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the manager, they can, you know, pull the pitcher and make a lineup and stuff like that. But, you know, there were times where, you know, you look at some of these past Royals teams and, you know, nobody's winning games with some of those guys. But, you know, yeah, and a lot of this falls, you know, to, like, as much as we talk about the positive difference Andy Reid makes, that, you know, there's a flip side to that too, right? You know, and what Romeo Crennel was doing last year. But the difference in coaching is just the other thing that you can see is there's a plan, you know. And there was a lot of times last year where you didn't know what they were trying to do, and then afterward when the coaches would try to explain, you still didn't know what they were trying to do. And that doesn't happen this year. Even when the plan doesn't work, you can see what the plan is.
Star sports columnist Sam Mellinger is our guest. You know, Sam, how tough is it to be a sports columnist in a town that's as completely sports obsessed, sports crazy as this one is?
If anything, I hope it makes it easier for me.
Really?
That, you know, that people love the sport, so you don't have to convince them to care. But, you know, I don't know what my life, my job would be like if I was, you know, if I had this job in whatever, Chicago or Dallas or Denver or some other place. But I do think that, you know, having grown up here, at least, you know, here-ish in the area, you know, spending a lot of weekends in Kansas City growing up and, you know, certainly following the teams in Kansas City, I think that helps. You know, I think that makes me a little bit more comfortable. There's, you know, sort of a little bit more institutional knowledge or just, you know, historical understanding.
It
really does. That's been a big aid for me.
Yeah. How much feedback do you get on a typical column that you write?
I don't know. I can't give you a real number, but it's a lot. I mean, if I need to check my email every day, you know, or else I get pretty backed up. And I love it. You know, I'm terrible. I've got to admit, I'm terrible at returning voicemails.
That was my next question.
Yeah. But, you know, email, Twitter, there's a lot of ways that people can get in touch with you. And I love every bit of it. I mean, I think that, you know, you get this too, right? There's a lot of people that are just whatever, cussing you out. Probably not a lot of thought put into it.
So what's that all about?
Yeah, but I think most people that take the time to respond to you, you know, they've put some thought into it. And even, you know, the great thing about sports, right, is it's an escape. There's emotion behind it and all these things. And I also like this, that you know, there's times where somebody will be, you know, really upset at you, and then you'll write them back and say, hey, man, you know, you missed this part of it. And then, oh, okay. You know, they're not just out to get you. Yeah. I remember one time in particular, I got this email, and I didn't check the timestamp, but I got this email about, you know, just so angry. It was after KU lost to Northern Iowa in the tournament like 3 years ago, and this guy was so angry. Cuss words, you know, just very personal attacks. And I wrote him back and, you know, tried to explain like what I was trying to do with the column. And he wrote back and he goes, oh my God, I'm sorry. He goes, alcohol, my team losing, and email do not mix. And I looked back and he sent that email at 2:30 in the morning. So, yeah.
You know, the ones I almost enjoy the most are the angriest ones, because some people call you up and they'll say, Kraske, you are, you know, stupid, all these things. What a horrible person I am. How ignorant I am. And they'll leave their phone number. It's not all of them, but some of them do. Those are the ones I love the most. You call them back, you know, even on a Sunday afternoon when I have some time. Hey, Bill, Steve Kraske from The Star. I could tell you were a little upset with me. I just wanted to give you a call and just chat with you for a minute. And invariably, they start reeling, backing up. I'm so sorry. I got way out ahead of myself. I apologize for being rude. Then you end up having a great conversation, and maybe you've got a new friend, too, down the road at some point, you know?
Yeah. and I guess that's part of why we have these jobs, though, right? That people care that much, and they get emotional about what we're writing about.
Yeah, and boy, they do get angry. Do the angry ones affect you at all? Does it cause you to pull your punches ever in the stuff that you write? Or does it cause you to pull your punches knowing that you'll be on the Chiefs when you're walking down into the Chiefs locker room the next day?
I don't think so. I mean, this is one of those hypotheticals but I don't think so. I mean, I think there's times where I write something, I'm like, okay, I know, you know, I can almost write out the emails that I'm going to get or the phone calls, and which is fine. Like, you understand, you know, different perspectives. I think the times that you worry is if you get blindsided and somebody says, you know, brings up a point that they're angry about that's valid and you didn't think about that.
Yes.
That's a dangerous place to
that
go.
That makes you wince, doesn't
it?
Yeah.
And the only thing I try to remember is when you're imagining that, when you're thinking of what's the reaction going to be of people that are angry or disagree with you, especially from the people that you're writing about, that's fine if they have that view, but can you defend it? And can you defend it with the truth? Can you defend it fairly? And if you can, then you go with it.
Yeah. And it sounds like from the introduction that I read about you, as you say about yourself, you won't always agree with what I write, but you should always know there is thought and research behind it. It sounds like, obviously, you're taking your work pretty seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it's I was, you know, one of these weird kids that went straight from, you know, I want to be a fireman or an astronaut to a sports writer, right, when I was like 14. So this is all that I've ever wanted to do, and to, you know, be able to do it here at The Star with this job. I mean, it really is a dream job if I ever thought to dream that big. I mean, it's been a privilege to do it, and I hope I never take it for granted.
You know, Sam, how do the Chiefs, how do the Royals react when you bang them on something? And again, you show up the next day. Does it bother them? Do they get on you for it? Do they chew on you? Do they gang up on you in the locker room and say, what the hell are you trying to do to us? Or how does that play out?
Yeah, it's different for different situations. But I think for the most part, the reaction, they're professionals, you know. And you know, with the Royals especially, they read everything.
Really?
You know,
and the organization Chiefs, you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Chiefs do too, but the Royals are kind of a different level, which I appreciate. I like that. And, you know, they'll come to me when they disagree with something, and we'll have a talk about it. You know, Dayton Moore is particularly good about that. And I'll hear his side, he'll hear mine, and then, you know, kind of we move on. The Chiefs, you know, most of that communication kind of comes through the PR staff, I think, more than anything else. But
how about the players themselves, Royals or the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a few guys that you'll write something about, and, you know, they won't tell you in particular, but you know, now they won't talk to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? and that happens, and that's fine. That's their right, you know. But I think for the most part, if you keep – here's what I think. If you keep, you know, your criticisms or judgments, good or bad, professional, then I think those guys keep it professional. Mm-hmm. You know, I think where you run into some problems is when you make kind of personal attacks. When you say a guy's, you know, fat, lazy, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's, you know, talk about his family or anything like that. I mean, you know, personal attacks will draw personal reactions. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, I think if you keep it professional, they'll understand it and they get it.
Do you do personal attacks?
I don't think I ever do. You know, if somebody thinks that I have, then we'll look at that. But that's one thing I always try and keep in mind. No.
You know, Sam Mellinger is our guest. He's a Star Sports columnist. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Again, 816-235-2888. Or you can drop us an email to uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us @kcurUpToDate. You once wrote to yourself, Sam, about this notion that being a sports columnist for the Star was your dream job. You said, actually, that might be a bit of a stretch because it implies that I thought this was even possible. So did you not think it was possible someday?
Well, I mean, you have to understand when, first of all, the Star, I've said this a couple times, but the Star was delivered to my house before I was old enough to read it, mm-hmm. you know, and then by the time that when I was in high school, and living in Lawrence, that was right about the time that Joe Posnanski and Jason Whitlock started at the Star around the same time. And what am I doing, you know, is a 15-year-old or whatever thinking that I'm going to have those guys' jobs?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I just never I guess I've never also I've never been kind of the guy that, you know, picks out one single job and that's my job and I'm just working toward that. You just sort of, to me, I know it sounds cheesy, but I've always tried to do the job I'm doing. And,
yeah.
and then whatever happens after that. But, you know, if the 16-year-old or 18-year-old Sam would know that this is what it would be when he was 35, and I would have freaked out.
What was it like trying to follow in the footsteps of Posnanski and Whitlock? Because those guys were sort of pillars of that sports section, obviously, for a bunch of years.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, and there was
National award winners and all this stuff, Sports Writer of the Year and Jason being Jason and, you know,
right.
man.
And I still, you know, have a huge amount of respect for both those guys. I mean, I think they are, you know, two of the very best. And when they were here at the Star together, I think they were the best two. They were the best pair of sports columnists, I think, of any paper in the country. I'm biased, I know, but I really believe that.
Mm-hmm.
It was intimidating. And it was Joe's spot that I filled. There was a short period of time that overlapped with Jason and I.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was, you know, Joe Posnanski was my, you know, journalism idol in a lot of ways. And I did freak out about that. And I called a lot of people, you know, to try to get advice. And you know, Bill Plaschke, I don't know if you know him.
He I know the name.
The LA Times,
yeah.
Sports writer, great writer. And I asked him specifically about this of, you know, kind of replacing somebody because he replaced Jim Murray.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, sure.
And,
sure.
And he said, you know, you'll get these emails, you know, you are not Joe Posnanski, and I did, and I got a lot of those. And he goes, you know what? At some point, I just kind of thought, yeah, I'm not. And he chose not to work here anymore, you know. And mm-hmm. I'm here, he's not. So let's move forward. And you know, I'll still get, you know, sort of these backhanded compliments about you know, like when Posnanski left, I was, you know, really upset, but you know, you're not the worst thing ever. You know,
yeah.
you'll get some of that, but, and I get it, you know, I love Joe too. So, I understand the attachment that readers have to him, but all you can do is work hard, do the best you can and see what happens from there.
I mean, what was the takeaway from those two guys from Joe Posnanski and from Jason Whitlock? What do you walk away with as a young sports writer reading those guys every day that sort of stays with you?
I think from Jason, I think Jason is really, really smart. I think people miss that because Jason, on purpose, sometimes underplays that part of who he is. But he is a really, really smart guy and gutsy and willing to be different.
Yeah.
You know, those were the things that I most, you know, took and admired from Jason.
And maybe he was different just for the sake of being different sometimes.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. He would do some of that and write something to get a certain reaction. And, you know, that's not my style. That's but it's worked really, really well for Jason. And you know, for Joe, his writing, the way, you know, you can read 2,000 words from Joe and you feel like you've read 500, you know, it's just so smooth and easy and fast. And he also has the best memory, I think. I don't know if that makes sense, but his memory is absolutely amazing. I mean, he'll remember things 8 years ago, these little details of a baseball game in June from, you know, 2004 that you're like, how did you do that? And he also has a really good way of taking a certain perspective, drawing you through the whole column and then hitting you right at the end.
Yeah.
You know? And that's something that I've, you know, always really admired about Joe.
Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here with Star Sports columnist Sam Mellinger. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're visiting with Star Sports columnist Sam Mellinger about a whole host of topics. You know, Sam, I was wondering about, is every column you write, is it your idea, or are you talking to editors out there who are flipping ideas at you, or how does it sort of play out in your world every day?
That there was one sort of, you know, template on the way to do it. But, yeah, I mean, most of them are my ideas, but they come with conversations with, you know, Jeff Rosen, our sports editor, you know, sometimes even Mike Fannin, the editor of the whole paper, or, you know, colleagues like Vahe Gregorian or Blair Kirkhoff or a lot of different people, or, you know, just people that you're writing about, conversations with, you know, whether it's John Dorsey or Dayton Moore or Tom Bahali or, you know, some of these people. I mean, it's just, there's no one way to do it. You know, it's
those conversations
sort of
help, don't they? Really help you formulate your thinking and sort of, you know, help you plot out where you want to go.
Yeah, there's so many times, I'm sure you run into it too, there's so many times where you have an idea and you think that you have this thing nailed, and then you'll make a phone call and somebody will point something out and they're like, no, idiot. Like, you know, why didn't you think of this? You're like, oh, I have.
And there goes that idea.
Right.
And you're scrambling for something else, you know.
Yeah.
Now, I've always wondered how you guys figure out columns, Sam, you know, during the course of a game. And sometimes you don't know how that game is going to turn out.
Sure.
And obviously the direction of your column is radically hinging upon how the game turns out. And you're basically writing a column, you know, in what, an hour or 30 minutes? Or it's just breathtaking how fast you guys got to work sometimes.
It
makes me nervous just thinking about it, to be honest
with you. Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, the Chiefs games, especially the ones that start at noon, you've got time.
Yeah.
You know, the Eagles game, the game in Philadelphia that was like a 7:30 local, 7:30 Kansas City time kick. I mean, that can be a lot tougher. But, you know, when you have time, and if it's a noon game, or even this Sunday, they play the Texans at 3:00, and that's plenty of time. I mean, it's, you know, it's the other ones. I mean, I remember there was a basketball game, K-State 3 years ago, I think, they had this really good team, and they played this double overtime game in Salt Lake City, and the game already started at like 9 or 9:30.
Wow.
You know, Kansas City time. And I wrote, I'd had the job for like 10 minutes too, and I wrote what I was convinced was just the column that was going to get me fired. You know, I was just, you know, incoherent. I hated it. I actually wrote an email to our sports editor at the time, Holly Lawton, and like apologized. And we went out afterward to get a beer, and this was when Jason Whitlock was still there, and, you know, he could tell I was, you know, kind of beating myself up, and he asked me why, and I told him. He goes, man, don't worry. You know, you had literally like 5 or 10 minutes to write that. He was like, as long as you didn't get the paper sued, you know, don't worry about it. You know, basically all you can do is all you can do in the time that you have to do it.
I mean, that can be just absolutely paralyzing, those deadlines that tight. And I haven't had a deadline for a column like that before, but for news stories I have. And you do find yourself, you know, wishing you were somewhere completely different than where you are, facing that kind of pressure to get a story in turn that quickly.
Yeah, it's sort of like sometimes you feel like a boxer, kind of, and you just duck and cover, you know, absorb punches and throw one when you can, but, you know, just get on to the next day, basically.
We're visiting with Sam Mellinger from The Star. You know, Sam, you've written this about yourself, too. I don't know how current this particular description is, but you wrote this. I live in downtown Kansas City, which I know is no longer true, and my roommate, a lab pointer mixed with a touch of separation anxiety named Frankie. I have conflicting interests in working out and pigging out. Don't judge me on that. I like strong coffee, spicy food, nonfiction books, and MMA. I Hate the Wave, In-Stadium Proposals, Flat Beer, and Slow Internet Connections. I guess what's wrong with in-stadium marriage proposals, Sam?
Oh, I just hate it. Just no creativity.
Because it's become such a cliche, right?
Yeah. Like, that's the story you're going to tell in 30 years? Like, come on, man. You got to do better than that.
Yeah. What usually wins out in your world, pigging out or working out?
It's a tug of war. The last few weeks, it's definitely been the pigging out. I spent a few days in Memphis last week, and that was
a little rough.
Yeah, that took a few weeks off my life, I think.
I'm always wondering, one of the guys I really admire, the sports writers I admired growing up, was a guy named George Plimpton, who was this participatory journalist where he took part in the activities he was writing about. I'm just wondering, do you ever have a chance to, steal a base against a Royals pitcher, or do you ever have a chance to play catch with somebody like Alex Smith, or try to cover Dwayne Bowe on a route just to get a sense of the level at which these guys operate?
That'd be fun. Yeah. More than a few years ago, I sort of tried out, I guess, for the Brigade, the Arena Football League team at the time. And just totally got pushed into it by Mike Fannin, who was a sports editor at the time, basically like shamed me into it. He goes, I hear you think you're an athlete. And I was like, no, that's not. You didn't hear that from me. But so I go out there and, I'm just trying not to embarrass myself. And part of the tryout was running these 40-yard dashes, and I don't remember my time. I'm ashamed to say it started with a 5. But
did it begin with a 5?
Yeah. And I just ripped my hamstring on the second one, just tore it to pieces. And actually the next day I had to go out and cover some playoff baseball. And so I'm limping around the stadium, and people are like, what happened to you? And that's just not a story you want to tell anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to some phone calls. 816-235-2888 is our phone number for Sam Mellinger. Our email address, updateat kcur.org. Steve from Kansas City is on. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Go ahead, you Steve. There? Yeah, go ahead,
yes,
Steve.
Yes, I had a question. You got a sports writer there and a political reporter. My question is this. The difference between Kraske covering government and Sam covering sports teams. Your job, Kraske, is to get the dirt, the story behind the story. But I'm always frustrated that sports writers don't seem to want to tell us what's going on really with the team in the clubhouse. Tom Haley gets fired, and only then do we find out everyone in the clubhouse hated his guts, and it had to impact the play. Is there some reluctance by sports writers to really dig and tell the stories of what's going on with the players, what they're thinking, the coach, the interaction, the relation with the ownership? You don't seem to see much of that.
So, Sammy, Steve's asking, you're holding back stuff sometimes. Why do you do it, Steve, if I'm hearing you right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It seems to be that. I'm not saying Sam does it, but it's been done many times.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think there's a couple parts of it. I think, one, people are a lot more willing to talk after, something happens, after a GM is fired or after a season's over, things like that. The specific example you brought up with the Todd Haley stuff and Kent Babb's amazing story, I think last January, that kind of blew all that stuff open. Kent was working on that, earlier. And actually, that's a pretty good example of things that were written, when everybody was still there. I mean, Scott was still in charge when that story ran. So, yeah, I mean, we try to do that as much as possible. But there's other times where a source will tell you something and, you can't write it. This is off the record. I'm telling you this in confidence that, just so you know on background. But, there's certain conditions where you get information. But, as much as possible, we try to do that. I mean, I think we did that with Trey Hillman when there was a divide in the clubhouse with the Royals. And, Kent certainly blew the Chiefs deal open last year. But you're right. I mean, I wish, if you're saying that you wish that there was more of that, I agree. I wish we could do more of that.
There's a constant tension, if I understand right, Sam. I mean, between, you get too hard on management, they're going to block you from covering the team you've got to cover to make a living to some degree, right?
There's a fear of that, and there's always the possibility of that. But my experience, and maybe I just haven't been doing this long enough, but my experience is that doesn't happen that much. That again, as long as you keep it professional, fair, accurate, What can they do? Just shut down because they think you've been mean to them? I think that happens a lot less than you might think.
Well, let me give you, if I can, a quick example.
Yeah.
Kraske will write about how Ted Cruz has blown up the Republican Party, his colleagues hate him, and it's impacting government. I don't think I've ever seen a story of a disruptive player in a clubhouse, whether it be baseball or football. And we know that there have been, because sometimes when they go to trade him, you read about, well, no one wants to touch him because he's a disruptive influence. And have you ever written or seen the star writer or sports writer stuff? If it impacts the performance, it ought to be a story.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, with the Royals a few years ago, and none of this, I hope the umbrella over everything that I say here is not that I or we as sports writers do a perfect job, because we don't. But, a few years ago when Jose Guillen was that disruptive force, I think we wrote a lot about that. I think last year, game two, when the Chiefs got blown out against Buffalo. I mean, you saw the star. You saw me and Kent, who had the other column job at the time, came out swinging. And a lot of people thought that was too early, that we were, making some stretches. And it certainly played out, the other way. So, I mean, we try to do it when we can. But, certainly we're not perfect. And there are a lot of walls and curtains that teams try to put up to keep you from seeing what's going on behind the scenes. But when we can, we do it. I wish we could do more of it.
Do they put up a lot of walls and curtains so you can't see Jose Guillen causing some problems behind the scenes?
Yeah, the walls are a lot thinner in baseball than they are in the NFL. But, yeah, I mean, they have, all professional teams, and I think a growing number of major college teams have what amount to PR staffs. I mean, maybe sometimes they call them something else. But, yeah, I mean, it's an image business for sure.
We had an email here about KC Sporting and the success of that team. What do you make of the success of professional soccer in Kansas City and how that franchise, has this sort of aura around it that it's just being run the right way?
Yeah, they've done an absolutely brilliant job, and they've done such a good job that I think people are connecting dots that aren't there. I mean, what they've done really well, incredibly well, is a connection with fans. Sporting Kansas City fans feel valued, I think, in a way that Royals fans don't, Chiefs fans don't, and I'm not just picking on them, in a way that Tigers fans don't, Twins fans don't, Rangers fans don't. Sporting has done a really good job of making that connection, specifically with the Cauldron, their very, very intense fans. But, what's funny is they've been so successful. That stadium is gorgeous. The team is winning. The fans, it's such a close relationship that people now want those Cerner guys to buy the Royals because, at least they'll spend. Not knowing Sporting has a pretty low payroll by MLS standards. You know what I mean? So people just sort of assume they must be spending money on players, and that's not always the case. They've just done a really great job with a lot of other things.
Sam, just a couple real quick ones here before you go out the door. I'll go through a series of questions here. What's your read on how serious Royals owner David Glass is about keeping the checkbook open and spending on the Royals going forward next year?
He better be. I mean, there's some indications now that the payroll will stay the same. I can't believe that, and that's going to be a really easy column to write if it stays the same. Yeah. And go up this offseason.
What one or things do the Royals need to do to get even better next year? What are their top priorities in your view?
They need to maintain, make sure the pitching doesn't slip, and they need to fix Mike Moustakas and Alcides Escobar.
Can you, and Moustakas, the third baseman, being a big, still an issue.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Not hitting enough,
right? Oh, my gosh. That season he just had, that's unacceptable. He knows it. Everybody knows it. They need, if they're not right on him, if he's not a good player, that sets them back a very big way. But, he did have 20 home runs, 2 years ago. So there's something there, but they need to bring it out.
And he has to turn it around.
Absolutely.
You think he can turn it around?
He's got the talent. He's got the talent. I worry about his plate discipline. I think, he strikes out too much and doesn't walk enough. But the talent's there.
Can you envision the Royals overtaking the Tigers next year?
Yeah, I can,
really?
Actually. Yeah, I mean, they would need a lot of things to go right. They would need a lot of things to go right. But, they've got everybody on their team, at least the position players, are all rising. They're at that age, experience level where you expect them to get better. There's a lot of room there.
Last question, KU basketball, best team in the country this year, or do we know?
It's a loaded year in college basketball. But they've got three top 10 picks, at KU. But Michigan State has a lot back. Kentucky, I think, was the preseason number one. Louisville's really good. But, KU is in that conversation for sure.
Sam, it's just been a pleasure.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Really enjoyed it.